Hello, glad to be back here. Can you all hear me? I hope. I think I've got the mic figured out by now. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to start reading where I left off last time. We were talking about how to overcome the challenges to being in the world, to being present in the world. While you're in the world, it's not so easy to be present. And we were talking about that last time, and we're going to continue talking about that a little bit more as we talk about what it's like to have to interact with people and speak with them. So I'm going to start on page 77 and read and stop here and there and comment on things as I see fit. As I see fit. So, here we go. No matter how well seated you are in presence, the level of ego in others and in the world, in business, in schools, and in other institutions and organizations, makes staying in presence challenging. If you didn't have an ego yourself, the level of ego in the world would be far less challenging. But egos activate other egos, and that's the problem. The problem with being in the world, then, is a problem within you and not really with the world. And that is important to see. The world doesn't have to change a bit for you to be in presence, and from presence for you to have an impact on the world. You just have to learn to hold your own in the world. And that's what we're going to be talking about. How to hold your own in the world, including in a conversation. One thing that helps is simply knowing that egos activate your own ego and that other people's egos will try to pull you into their state of consciousness. Egos can't help doing this, but you can help yourself stay in presence by remaining conscious and aware while speaking and interacting with others. So there is this phenomenon, which many of you have probably noticed, that when there are two people communicating and they are coming from different states of consciousness, there is a tendency for both people to want to bring the other person into their state because we don't seem to like differences. The ego especially doesn't like differences. And so when it perceives that, however subtle that perception might be, when it perceives that someone else is at a higher state of consciousness, it seeks to bring the other person down to its level. And this is all happening on an unconscious level, of course. Mostly we aren't aware of this dynamic happening. And yet, if you pay attention, you'll see that this is what happens very often in conversations. You get sucked into someone else's gossip, judgment, negativity, and then all of a sudden you're feeling bad when you started off feeling just fine. So we all know what that's like. So here are some of the things egos do to draw you into their world. So I'm going to be listing here several things that you run into that are traps, you could say, that the ego pulls you into its state of consciousness in these various means. There are hooks that we easily get hooked into. And I want to add also that nearly every time we open our mouths and speak something, it's in service to creating or maintaining the false self, especially any sentences that start with I. So this is something that is very helpful to begin to notice, how so much of our speech is really just an expression of this egoic thought stream, this voice in our head, that is the creator of the false self. And when we give voice to that thought stream, we are becoming the false self. We're giving life to it. And so almost everything we say is this thought stream and is an expression of the false self. And that's why in spiritual groups, they ask people to be quiet, to be in silence, or they hold silent retreats, because it is a way of beginning to see this that is going on in within most of us, that our speech is really not ours. It's our false self speech. It doesn't really belong to our true self. And that in speaking it, we lose presence. We lose contact with presence and with our true nature. So here are a few of the many ways that egos can draw us into their world. Number one is ego state an opinion to elicit an opinion. They debate, the egos love to debate. So once they've elicited an opinion from you, the debate is on. Egos love debating because they love demonstrating that they're right or smarter than someone else, although their opinions rarely prove that. Egos need to be right, and for that, an opinion is needed. Opinions are also good for stirring up emotions and creating drama, which egos also love. The problem with opinions is that none of them contains the whole truth. So, first of all, I want to say about opinions, of course, we have opinions. It's normal to have opinions. There's nothing essentially wrong with an opinion. We're going to have an opinion about who we want for president, for instance. The problem with opinions is in speaking about them and getting in debates with other people, trying to be right and trying to change other people's opinions. The best way to relate to our own opinions is simply to hold them lightly. And the way we hold them lightly is to realize the truth that was just spoken here in this paragraph. The problem with opinions is that none of them contains the whole truth. So if we can remember that about opinions, we can hold our own much more lightly, and we can approach other people's opinions much more lightly, knowing that what they're speaking is coming from a limited perspective that doesn't contain the whole truth. But it probably does contain some truth, and maybe we can give them that. So we don't have to let opinions stand in our way of relating to others. It's how we relate to our own opinions and relate to the opinions of others. So when opinions are expressed in conversation, the best tact is to simply listen and experience what is being said without reacting to it, without jumping in with a counter opinion or trying to be right, and just noticing how the ego wants to do that, and maybe noticing how the other person, in expressing an opinion, might be trying to be right. And also noticing how this, all of this speaking about opinions, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really serve. We think, at least our ego thinks, that sharing opinions is very important conversation, and that's why we do it. But if you really look at this, it's mostly a one-upmanship that doesn't change people's ideas. At least when you're coming from the ego, it certainly doesn't change people's ideas. And so sharing of opinions in this way doesn't really serve. And you can notice that from presence. If you're able to stay in presence in the midst of someone expressing an opinion that has a lot of righteousness about it, self-righteousness about it. And the other thing about opinions is they make you feel like somebody. I'm somebody who believes this. I'm a Republican. I'm a vegan. I'm an environmentalist. I'm a spiritual person. These are all identities. no matter how spiritual the identity is, it's still a self-image and identity of the false self. There are lots of people walking around with a very spiritual false self. And so that's the trickiness of the ego, is it will take on a spiritual false self, and it will be superior and feel self-righteous because it is more spiritual than someone else, or so it thinks. So, number two, egos tell stories about what happened to them, because those stories and the emotions they stir up give them a sense of identity. This happened to me. By retelling those stories, they get to keep their self-images, which the false self needs to exist. The same enjoyment of stirring up emotions can be seen in the news media. So telling stories serves the same purpose as opinions. It makes you feel like somebody. I'm somebody who had this happen and who wants this in the future and is going through this right now. And that gives you a sense of yourself. There's nothing wrong with that. It's normal to tell stories and to have a sense of yourself and to have certain self-images. It, again, is really more a matter of holding these self-images and stories more lightly and recognizing that you are not those images, you are not those identities, those stories, those opinions, that history. You are something far beyond that, that is able to notice when you're telling a story, or notice when your emotions have gotten stirred up. Now, the ego loves to stir up emotions because emotions give dimensionality to a self-image. It makes a self-image come alive, feel real. So first you have a self-image that is part of the false self, and then that self-image creates some feelings, and then you are an angry person, and that feels very real because emotions are felt in the body. They're experienced in the body. They are very real. They're tangible. So emotions give the false self a tangibility that it in fact does not have. It is really just a thought, but emotions animate the thought and turn it into a very believable sense of self and sense of being me in the world. Number three, egos complain. Sharing likes and dislikes is a favorite pastime of egos. I like this, says one. Oh, I don't like that, says another. This passes as camaraderie. But what it really does is shore up the sense of I. Now you've taken a stand. Now you are somebody. I am someone who likes this or that. So again, sharing likes seems, it's harmless enough, really. It's what we do. It's what a lot of our conversations are about. It greases the wheels of our social relationships, and to some extent it serves for that. But it's good to notice that these likes and don't likes and expressing them is not a very satisfactory or fulfilling way to communicate with other people. And it sets people apart. It keeps people on the surface, so that when you're identifying with something that you like, the person you're talking to sees you as someone who likes that. And they have then a very narrow view of you. You've given them an idea about you to latch on to, and they begin to see you that way. And so this is how our self-images are reinforced. Now, if you look at these kinds of conversations more closely, even though they do grease the social wheels to some extent and serve to that extent, you can also begin to see that they don't serve you. They don't serve anything. They don't serve any purpose except to create and maintain the sense of I. Because it's all about I, what I like. And the truth is, if you really look at these I statements, I like or I don't like, are they even true? If I say, I don't like vanilla ice cream, is that really true? Because if somebody handed me a bowl of vanilla ice cream, I'd probably eat it. So much of what comes out of our mouths isn't even true. And so it's really wonderful when you can begin to bring more awareness to all of the things that come out of our mouths and ask, does this serve? And what is this serving? What purpose is this speech serving? Is this just for upholding the false self? And is that very satisfying? So when other people are complaining, we don't need to join in with our complaints. You can just notice how it feels in your body to complain, or how it feels in your body to have an opinion, as we were speaking about before, or even how it feels in your body to tell a story, because so many of the ego stories are negative. They make us feel bad. They stir up negative emotions. And this doesn't serve us. So our body is telling us something when we feel yucky or feel bad because we have joined in on a complaint, or we've joined in on telling a story or expressing an opinion. Let your body be the signal that you've slipped into the egoic state of consciousness. Notice how bad it feels and choose to give yourself a gift, the gift of peace and freedom, by stepping out of that once you see it. Once you see that you've gotten caught in a complaint or an opinion or a story, you can just stop and forgive yourself and take a step back, take a deep breath, and not continue the conversation in that direction. Number four, egos judge others. Egos love to talk about others. We call that gossip, don't we? This talking about others is often under the guise of sharing information and insights, or trying to understand or fix other people. However, within such conversations is generally an agenda on the part of the egos to prove themselves right and superior to others. Here is another thing you can notice in conversations with others, that people really believe their judgments, they value their judgments, they feel that they're really useful to share with others. They feel that they're true, and that somehow they are expressing a genuine insight or understanding that, when shared, will enlighten the person they're talking to. This is a great spiritual guise, really. The ego has usually, by that time, co-opted any good intent for insight and turned it into gossip, and invited the other person to jump in and gossip along with you. So people love to do this, and they feel self-righteous and superior, and there's a certain pleasure in that. I call it an egoic pleasure. Some people have called it a dirty pleasure. The pleasures of the ego are somewhat there. There is a pleasure in gossiping, a pleasure in giving an opinion and complaining. There's a certain subtle pleasure that we get out of that, or we wouldn't do it. But become aware of that. Become aware that it actually doesn't feel good at all to talk about others, to gossip. It causes you to feel bad about yourself. It's a really interesting rebound effect, actually. When you talk about others in a negative way, you end up feeling bad about yourself. And then you have to pile on more things to try to convince yourself and other people that you are superior. So the more we indulge in egoic speech, the worse we feel about ourselves and the more we want to indulge in egoic speech. It's kind of a vicious circle that way. Number five, egos love to give unsolicited advice. While pretending to be helpful, advice is often a type of opinion and serves to position the one giving the advice as right or superior. Although wisdom coming from presence might appear at times to be advice, usually those receiving such wisdom can tell the difference between that and the ego's advice, and they respond accordingly. So there are times when we open our mouth and out pops wonderful wisdom from our deepest self that is truly helpful to others. And when that happens, we relax and feel happy and excited, and the other person relaxes and feels at ease and peaceful and excited also. So there's a feel in our body to when we speak from our deepest self. When we speak the truth, it feels a certain way. So sometimes advice that we give to others comes out of our mouth spontaneously without forethought. But so much of the advice that is given in conversations is unwanted advice, unsolicited advice. And I heard a saying once that said that advice that is unsolicited is usually construed as judgment. And that's so true. When people are trying to give us advice and we aren't looking for it, we feel judged. Why do they feel like I need that advice? Do they think I don't know what to do? Do they think I'll make a mistake? So it's not that helpful to give advice from the level of the ego unless someone specifically asks us for it. And even then, if that advice is coming from our ego and not from our deepest self, well, it's going to be conditioning. It's going to be pat rules or assumptions about what may happen based on the past, which we can't really assume. We can't assume that things are going to happen in the future as they did in the past. So judgment is a real red flag, and most people are aware of that, but it comes as quite a revelation to many people at first if you tell them that their judgments aren't useful, aren't helpful, are not true, and only interfere with relationships. They often will argue with you because they do believe their relationships serve a purpose, particularly in changing other people. Well, that is the problem, isn't it? Egos want to change other people to fit their conditioning, and other people don't necessarily want to change, or nor do they need to necessarily, to please you, to fit your conditioning. Number six, egos love, these types of communications are red flags pointing to the ego. From presence, there is only clear seeing of this, compassion for the human condition, and acceptance for this way, being the way it is. Any judgment you have around these things is just more ego to be noticed and have compassion for. Others are the way they are, and in that moment, they can be no other way than that. The same goes for you as well. So I think that bears repeating. Others are the way they are, and in that moment, they can be no other way than that. And the same goes for all of us. So this is the attitude or the way of being that you bring to conversations with people who are ego-identified. You notice what's going on in the conversation. You notice where their speech is coming from without judging it. So you see it clearly, and then you have compassion for this difficult human condition that we all find ourselves in, of having an ego that judges, that complains, that has opinions, that tells stories, that suffers. Because all of these things that the ego does through speech and mentally cause suffering. They are the definition of the suffering of the human condition. These things make us feel terrible about ourselves, about other people, about life. They paint the world in a negative light. They paint others in a negative light. So the challenge with this information that I'm giving you today, with being aware of opinions and stories and complaints and judgments and unsolicited advice, the challenge is to not use these to judge others, but to use this information to stay anchored in presence in the midst of these things. So that is the work, to stay anchored in presence. The best approach for dealing with egoic communications is to listen quietly without chiming in with your own opinions, judgments, advice, stories, or complaints. This will keep you from getting pulled into the thought stream that's coming out of other people's mouths. Just notice what's being spoken without identifying with it, without agreeing or disagreeing with it. When you're noticing from a place of neutrality, equanimity, and compassion, you know you're in presence. So this is the same relationship we have to our own thought stream. With our own thought stream, we as spiritual people on the spiritual path are learning to notice the thoughts in our thought stream and to not get involved with them, to not believe them, to not follow them or use them as guides for living. We don't give the voice in our head power. And so the same is true when we're listening to someone else's thought stream come out of their mouth. We're learning to just be in a place of neutrality, equanimity, and compassion to their thought stream without getting involved in it, without jumping in and joining in and continuing to feed the egoic thoughts that are coming out of their mouth. And that can only be beneficial to them, not just us. Being in presence is good for everyone. The funny thing is, the less you say in most conversations, the nicer you're likely to seem to others, and the nicer you're likely to actually be. This is funny, isn't it? We think that we're being so social and that the right thing to do is to just join in and be like everyone else and say what they're saying and agree with them or argue with them, that that's the way to be human beings. And it is one way to be a human being. It's more a way to be a suffering human being. And it's a way to waste a lot of your time, really. So the funny thing is that you actually will be perceived by others to be nicer when you say very little. And you actually will be nicer. Because when the thought stream comes out of people's mouths, it's not usually that pretty. Oh, it might start out benign enough, but it easily can go south. The impulsive need to speak is almost always the ego, as it pushes forward to get some need met by the conversation, to be right, to be seen as smart, or to gain approval. And I want to emphasize that last one, because one of the reasons egos engage in their conversation is not just to be right or to be seen as smart or superior, but to gain approval. They want to be similar. So I've noticed that with myself when I have wanted to break the habit of gossiping after seeing how damaging it really is. It's a very bad habit, but one that a lot of us have and we've learned very well to do. I saw that it was from a place of wanting other people's approval that I would gossip. I would join in to the gossiping, join in with the gossiping that was going on, because I wanted everyone to like me, to approve of me. I wanted to fit in. It is, I dare say, a female way to join with others. We learn it very well growing up. We join with others by complaining, by gossiping, by judging. We become a part of the group. So it takes a certain amount of courage to not do that, to curtail that impulse to speak. So curtailing that impulse to speak keeps the ego out of the conversation and gives presence a chance instead. By being quiet, you're making space for presence in the conversation, and people will feel that. Then speak only when you're moved to speak by presence. Just as you might wait before answering an email, waiting a moment before speaking will help you stay connected to presence and make it more likely you'll express presence instead of the ego when you do speak. So this is a very simple instruction, really. Just slow down, try to stay connected with presence, and speak only when you're moved to speak by presence. And wait just a moment before you respond to other people. Don't let the first thing that comes to mind come out of your mouth. That is usually the ego speech. It's usually the thought stream that is the first thing to come out of someone's mouth. And we usually say, oh, that person has no filters. And that's what we mean. A person who just says whatever comes into their thought stream, into their mind, into their egoic mind. That person has no filters. And usually that person isn't very socially astute either, because a person without any filters to their thought stream is bound to be quite negative, complaining, judgmental, a very unpleasant person to be around. So here are some tips for staying in presence when you're having a conversation. Number one, notice what others are saying and where it's coming from, the ego or presence. And I might add, without judging them. Just notice where what they are saying comes from. Number two, notice what your own thought stream might be producing in response to theirs. So that's key as well. Notice what they're saying, but notice what you're thinking in response to what they're saying. The more aware you are of what your thought stream is, what your automatic responses are, the more choice you'll have around whether to say those things or not. Hopefully not. Number three, keep your attention on what you're experiencing in the here and now, on the aliveness in your body, and on your sensory experience. We talked about this last time, the importance of being in the body, that the body is a doorway into presence. So when you find yourself tempted to get caught up in thoughts, either your thoughts or someone else's thoughts that are coming out of their mouths, then just turn your attention for a moment to what you're experiencing through your senses. What are you seeing? What are you hearing? What is the experience in your body like? Are you contracted? Are you expanded? Are you relaxed? Are you not relaxed? Is there an aliveness that you can experience? Try to focus on that aliveness and bring it to the forefront, and that will help you stay in presence. Number four, stay seated in what is noticing. Stay with what is aware. Okay, so after you're noticing, that's the first step. Noticing is always the first step. It's the little step back from the mind that we can take. We notice thoughts, or we notice other people's speech. But then you can take another little step back by noticing what is noticing. Notice what is aware. What is aware? What is hearing these words? Do you see how that is a little step back from noticing the words I'm speaking? As you're hearing, you're noticing the words I'm speaking. Now take a little step back and notice what is aware. This is a mystery. This is presence. What is aware? That is presence. That is who you are. If you can stay there for a while, you will experience everything you've ever wanted to experience, really. Peace, relaxation, joy, love. It's what we all want. Take a step back, notice what is aware. Number five, when you're speaking, be attentive to how much ego is in what you're saying, particularly in your I statements. So be very attentive to your own speech. Don't go unconscious. Stay conscious to what you're saying. Make a conscious choice of what you say and what you don't say. I grant you this is not easy, but it does get easier the more you practice it. We have been practicing speaking whatever comes to our mind. The egoic mind, the thought stream, has been reinforced our entire lives over and over and over again. So many times that it is so natural and spontaneous to just blurt out whatever is going through our mind. And to think that that is somehow valuable and useful. On the spiritual path, we learn to observe our thoughts, inquire into them, and ask, is this useful? Is this true? Is this even true? And what we discover is that most of the thoughts in the thought stream are completely unnecessary, and most of them are not even true, or they contain so little truth that you can't really even say they're true. They only have such a little bit, which makes them believable enough, but that still doesn't mean they are true. When you say I, notice what that's like. Can you hear the ego? Can you feel it? Your own presence is what's able to know this. Being identified with the ego feels tight, contracted, and icky. The more identified you are with I, the less good you feel about yourself, and the stronger the need is to defend yourself, to be right, and to be special. Those who have very little identification with the ego have difficulty even saying I because that seems so false. So if you have a hard time saying or believing I, or believing what you're saying after you say I, that's a very good sign. It means you aren't very identified with the false self. Notice that you believe what you're saying to different degrees, even as the words are coming out of your mouth. This is an excellent practice. Notice when you are talking that some of the things you're saying you believe really strongly, and that some of the things that you're saying you don't really believe that much. After I had a spiritual awakening, this became so extremely clear. I would find myself saying some of the conditioned responses that I was used to saying to people, certain little irritating statements, you know, statements of irritation or complaining that were habitual, that had become habitual. But what I noticed was that they no longer felt true. They would come out of my mouth and they felt hollow. They didn't ring true. And yet I was still saying them. So that is a situation that we often find ourselves on the spiritual path when we've progressed quite far along into disidentification with the egoic mind. We find ourselves possibly saying some of the habitual things, but stopping in the midst of them and saying to ourselves, why am I saying this? This isn't true at all. I don't mean this. So there is this place where we may still repeat habitual things without really meaning them. And the more awareness we bring to that when that happens, the sooner those habitual statements will begin to drop away and not come up to be said anymore. So there's a process of certain thoughts and expressions, habitual expressions, eventually dropping away because they have been seen to be unuseful and untrue. But it can take quite a while for those habit patterns to wind down and to finally disappear. But eventually they do. If you don't continue to feed them by giving voice to them and your belief to them, they will eventually wind down, disappear, and drop out of the thought stream altogether so that they don't even come up anymore in your thoughts. And so you wouldn't even express them. The degree to which you believe what you're saying is the degree to which you are identified with the false self, and also the degree to which presence is there, since presence is what notices identification. The more ego or identification with thought there is, the less presence there is. The less ego or identification with thought there is, the more presence there is. So I would like to just repeat this paragraph because I think it says a mouthful. The degree to which you believe what you're saying is the degree to which you are identified with the false self, and also the degree to which presence is there, since presence is what notices identification. The more ego or identification with thought there is, the less presence there is. The less ego or identification with thought there is, the more presence there is. So I've talked about this before, that the progress on the spiritual path is less and less identification with the thought stream, with the thoughts that go through our mind as that mental commentary. We become less interested in them. We don't believe them. They fall into the background. and they are no longer compelling, and we don't give voice to them. That is the progress. But first we have to notice them and choose not to give voice to them. The thought stream is most reinforced by speech. Certainly it's reinforced by thinking thoughts over and over and over again in our own head, but it is very much reinforced by speaking these thoughts to others who often agree and reinforce those thoughts for us. So one of the most critical things in becoming detached from thought is to not speak the thoughts in your thought stream, to not give voice to them, to not share them with others, and to not allow others a chance to feed them, to agree with them, to pile on. So that silence is an extremely important practice on the spiritual path. It's not just a matter of silencing our mind. That's not the only reason we meditate, to silence our mind. In so doing, we're also gaining control over not speaking those thoughts. Because the thoughts we end up speaking are the ones we are most unconscious to, and the ones that have a compelling nature about them. And if we have meditated, we will have some distance from our thoughts. They won't be so compelling. We'll be able to have some choice around them. The word identification gives the impression that ego identification is either happening or not. You're either identified or not. But rather than being black or white, there are many shades of identification, just as there are many degrees in which you believe something. You may believe or be identified with a thought just a little or completely. And those are two very different experiences of thought and two very different states of consciousness. The egoic state is one in which you believe your thoughts without question. The enlightened state is when you no longer believe your thoughts. Talking about yourself can be a slippery slope. You may start out not identified at all with I and end up more identified than you'd like. Limiting how much you say at any one time will make it less likely that your ego will step in and take over. Both conscious and unconscious people often start out speaking in equanimity and aligned with love and good intentions, but then the ego slips in and inserts its point of view, and the emotions begin to roll in. State what you want to say briefly, and then stop and let others speak. Find out what they have to bring to the flow of conversation. Being present to others stands a chance of bringing others into presence with you. Presence is not only good for you, but for everyone. So although egos can activate your ego and get it going in directions you don't want it to go, being in presence can activate presence in others and help turn the world around, one person at a time. From this chapter, it would be impossible not to conclude that your conversations and interactions with others will change dramatically once you begin living more from presence. One of the ways that are likely to change is that you'll lose interest in being with those who are deeply invested in their egos and uncomfortable or unfamiliar with presence. Your friends just might change, but that's okay. Other people will take their place, or you'll simply enjoy more time alone or with your loved ones. So that concludes this chapter. And it's a good stopping place for the reading. And I'm going to check the boards just for a second here. Okay, I'm going to, there's a short message that Jesus would like to contribute. So I'm going to take a moment and just Let him come through with this message. Greetings and hello. This is the one you have known as Jesus the Christ. I'm happy to be with you today. And I would like to just underline one important thing about today's reading, and that is the importance of silence, the importance of practicing silence. And I would ask you to consider putting a practice of silence, including a practice of silence in your day for however long you are willing to do that. The longer the better, really. So if you can be more aware of what is coming out of your mouth and be more careful to stay silent and perhaps withdraw from conversations that are not necessary. So many of the conversations that you hold with others are not necessary. They drain your energy. They stir up your emotions. And they serve no purpose but to uphold the false self. So please consider withdrawing from some of these conversations, which may mean even withdrawing from certain relationships in your life that leave you feeling drained and unhappy and contracted. Notice how you feel and make a choice for yourself to stay in presence and to stay in the place of peace and contentment and joy that exists in that state of quiet. And as you are being quiet, be sure to notice the thought stream and practice not getting involved with that. Practice staying in silence in relation to your own thought stream. And remember that whatever you give voice to, you have just reinforced. Your words are powerful that way. They don't create all of reality, but they do reinforce your inner reality. And if you speak of your fears, your judgments, your complaints, you have reinforced your negative internal reality. You've made it stronger, more believable to you, more real. And why would you do that? You don't need to have a negative internal reality. If you let your mind do what it does without making a choice otherwise, that is what you'll have. You all create your own internal reality completely. You don't create your entire external reality, but your internal reality does affect your external reality. It will draw to you people of like consciousness. So if you are expressing a negative internal reality, you will draw to you people who are of a similar vibration. If you don't want that to be your experience, and I'm sure you don't, then learn to manage your internal reality and learn to manage your speech, so that you don't express a negative reality to others and join with them in their negative reality. Turn this world around. Turn it around through silence and through speech that comes from essence. You'll find that that essence is not very talkative. Presence is quiet in the presence of others. And other people love that. They thrive in that. It nourishes them just as it nourishes you. So do this for yourself. Do this for others. Nourish your internal reality. Create a beautiful, positive, peaceful internal reality by being in proper relationship to your own thoughts and by not reinforcing them by giving voice to them. And then what you say that comes out of your mouth will likely come from presence, because that's what will be left to say. And that will nourish everyone. Okay, so there you have it. I do believe I am finished for the day with a couple minutes to spare. Let's see if there, I didn't ask for questions because in the past there haven't usually been many questions. But if people would like, if people have questions, like if they're accumulating, you actually could email me with questions. I'd, you know, be happy to receive questions from you if you want to email me during the week. I'd be happy to hear whatever questions you might have. So maybe that might be a way we could do this course too, is that you communicate with me through email. My email is gina@radicalhappiness.com. That's gina@radicalhappiness.com. So feel free to communicate with me if you like. Alrighty then, I am going to say thank you so very much for being here and for listening. I really enjoyed doing this, and I will be back next week at the same time. Bye for now.